What's up, Level Up Nation? Welcome to episode 112 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined by the king of the courtside himself, Royalty. Royalty is with us today. Joey, what's poppin', buddy?
Things are well, John. We had quite the exciting weekend.
I'm still a little sore from standing from, like, you know, 9 hours. Nation, head on over to Twitter, give Joey a follow. That's at Courtside King on the Twitterverse, and you might find out why he was standing for so long and I was standing for so long. Or follow me on Twitter as well. That's at Fiasco, and you'll hear why I was standing for so long on Saturday as well. Good reasons, trust me. Awesome things. If you're watching here live on Twitch, those handles are right below on those pretty little picture boxes that have our mugshots on them. If you're listening on the podcast later on down the road, welcome. And you'll find those handles in the show notes for you. Nation, it might be the off season, but League of Legends is the gift that keeps on giving. The League of Drama makes an off season debut. I hope we don't tamper with anything talking about this topic. And believe it or not, there's other topics we're touching on as well. Joey, what else are we talking about this week on episode 112?
John, per usual, we have a few roster announcements to bring up. On top of that, we do have the rest of the Overwatch League team expansion reveals. So it's going to be fun to talk about that. Some exciting new apparel sponsorships. We are talking about an event we had this weekend that involves FIFA. Microsoft still in the news. Big surprise there. And League of Legends. We are heading into EU for free agency.
I feel like you find a way to put Xbox in the show notes every week.
Wait till you hear this one.
Oh boy, I'm ready. But sir, I don't even want to touch on Xbox until I have my drink of choice. So, Joey, it's that time-honored tradition passed down from generation to generation. It is time for the drink of choice, sir. Your beverage, please.
John, I am not feeling that well tonight. I have quite a headache, but I'm still here recording, but with a water in my hand, because I do not want to drink beer and get a bigger headache. But for those fantasy football players out there, I just read that AJ Green is having season-ending surgery, so I kind of want to drink now.
Oh, is he on your team?
He is on both my teams.
Well,
rip.
Well, Joey, allow me to lighten the mood. Allow me to bring hope and cheer to this podcast, to this episode, episode 112. Joey, we talked about it last week. I realized I had 3 bottles in my refrigerator. It is cloud, baby.
Oh,
all the
shoot.
Way from South Korea. Cloud is in my paws, in my mitts for episode 112. This episode is going to be outstanding. It's going to be stellar. It's going to be amazing. Why? Cloud. Product plug. Please sponsor. Joey.
Okay, wait. Time out there, sir. You said we could not buy these in stores around here.
I found one place that does.
Let's enlighten our listeners and myself as well.
If you're in the Washington, D.C. area and you like to taste this amazing South Korean beer, Cloud, it's Cloud spelled with a K, kind of like Courtside King spelled with 2 Ks. I believe Wegmans has it. I've also found it at, I think it wasn't Total Wine, was it? I can't remember. I honestly can't. It was that long ago. I'm pretty sure I found it at Wegmans. So if you have a Wegmans nearby or some kind of grocery store that is awesome enough to carry amazing international beers and import them, Cloud, brought to you by South Korea. South Korea, the mecca of esports. What else do you need? Joey, you have your water. I have my Cloud. Let's waste no more time. We have a lot to get into, so let's get right into gaming and esports news. Let's go!
Well, John, both of us recently picked up a game being Rainbow Six Siege on Steam's sale for the autumn version, and they're making a lot of moves in the pro scene. We've talked about them a lot. They're continuing to expand the scene. They now have revenue sharing. They have a lot of teams buying in, and now we have a few exciting roster moves. Rogue is adding Vertical to round out their Rainbow Six squad, and he'll be the team's new entry fragger. And then for Fnatic, who just finished, I believe, in the semifinals, they will be adding a 6th member to their Rainbow Six squad in Virtue. So 2 big moves there, John. Again, this is an expanding scene. We continue to see more and more people buy in, both as players and organizations. And both these players seem very talented to me. And to you as well, I'm going to assume from that reaction.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, I mean, no, they're great players. The game continues to grow. It's outstanding how well this game continues to grow. And it's really no surprise that we're seeing these organizations that have been around in esports for a while still put more and more money into their teams, building these rosters, and other organizations putting money towards growing in this scene as well. So it's a great ad for Rogue. It's a great ad for the player that's joining Rogue. I'm sorry, you called it Vertical
for Rogue, vertical? And then that Virtue for Fnatic.
That is not vertical. I got Virtue, but that's not vertical to me. That's
how do you not get vertical out of that?
Because you know what? I don't spell well. So
that's
when
a
you,
T. When Vert, V-E-R-T,
vertical.
And C-L.
Yeah, vertical.
Where do you get the col?
Vertical. With the C, it's a hard C. It's a K.
But then where's the T? Vertical wouldn't have a T.
Yeah, it's whatever. I'm over it.
I'm going to go vertical on this one. That's
you,
the way
you,
I've
You caught me off
read
guard.
It.
I was actually bringing up a couple tabs for a topic later on down the road.
Okay, Pittsburgh Knights has entered Call of Duty. They have signed Parasite's team. I honestly have not heard too much about the Pittsburgh Knights, but they have made some previous success in Fortnite and PUBG previously. So we'll have to see how they do in Call of Duty. This is definitely a bigger title in terms of esports, as Fortnite and PUBG are still trying to develop their scenes. And that brings us to the Overwatch League team reveals. We previously talked about the Vancouver Titans, and we saw their colors. They were a dark green and dark blue with a Yeti-looking logo for their Titan. It looks like most of everything that was leaked is correct, except the logo does look slightly different, John.
It does look slightly different, and I think the green is a little bit more neon than it is dark green.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is the one big change. The dark blue is still there, but this is one of the things we touched on. We definitely wanted to see them keep these colors. It is representative of Vancouver. The colors come straight off of the Vancouver city flag. So it's a good way to represent your city that you're carrying the title of. So there's no better way of doing that than making those colors your own. Yeah, you tweak it a little bit, bring in the neon green. I'm completely fine with that.
Yeah, and I don't even think it's a straight up neon either. It's kind of like it's almost in between where neon green would be and where the old dark green.
Yeah, that's why I said it was a little bit more neon.
Okay, I like that.
Than
I like
we normally
that.
Saw. But no, I mean, I still don't like the actual logo itself, because to me that's not a Titan. That is a Yeti. And it's very misleading. That's like, you know, holding up a Budweiser bottle and calling it Miller Lite. It's not. It's clearly something different. And that's kind of like where I'm at with this. I love the logo itself. Take the name away from it. The logo looks amazing. I don't like the name Titans with it, though. Call them the Vancouver Yetis. It still works. Or make it a little bit more, I don't know, mythological, like Greek mythological or Roman mythological. Make it look a little bit different than a furry Wookiee, almost.
I'm trying to pull up the old one. Yeah, okay. I think this looks much more like a Titan than the old logo did, though, if you compare the two. I think slowly made it look more like a Titan. I agree, though. It still looks kind of Yeti-ish. At the same point, I think the mustache helps play it a little bit more into the Titan realm, as well as the crown shape at the top of the head. I agree. It looks more like a gorilla/Yeti type of thing to me. At the same point, I'm happier with what came out of this as opposed to the first original logo we saw. And I like the color scheme more, John, to be honest. I think dark green and dark blue is good, but it didn't pop as much. Now that you have the lighter green, I feel like there's more pop to the logo scheme.
And also, let's hit on this. It's really a color combination we don't already have in Overwatch League. So it's definitely unique in that sense as well. So, you know, kudos to them for doing that, making something different, not something that we've, you know, already have three teams with.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, we have a lot of... what is it, red and black, that there are so many teams under that same color scheme?
Red and black, red and blue, blue and red, however you want to mix it around. Really, red's a very predominant color in Overwatch League. We do have a couple outliers. You know, you do have your Spitfire, you know, that baby blue and orange. You know, the Spark with that amazing, I wouldn't even call it baby blue. It's like lighter than baby blue and pink, which is absolutely fantastic. You know, you have these other teams with unique color combinations. And then you have a bunch of teams that kind of repeat the same safe colors over and over and over, being red and blue. And then you have Vancouver Titans come out and they're like, you know what? We're going to tilt this whole thing on its head. We're going to go almost neon green and a dark blue. It looks great. It looks great on the characters. It looks great on a jersey. And I just think this is a jersey that's really going to stand out because of that. I think this jersey and the Spark, whenever they do release concepts for that jersey and their merch, those are going to be two big selling ones just based upon the color pattern. A lot of people are going to be attracted to that.
a lot of people like cotton candy, and that is exactly what they're going to get from the Spark jerseys.
Yeah, absolutely.
With that being said, let's stick with Overwatch League, but change it up a bit. They have partnered with Fanatics, who we easily know from sports as a huge industry leader as far as apparel goes. Fanatics is now going to be the master licensee and worldwide retailer for the Overwatch League. This is huge, John. Not only is it big in a money sense, but this is Fanatics' first move into esports. And on top of that, John, we both questioned this on Twitter earlier. What does this mean for Into the AM that held the sponsorship prior to this move?
Yeah, you know, the big thing here is Fanatics is a great company. Don't get me wrong. They are able to distribute all over the world on a mass scale. They put out decent quality products. They're the official championship shirt of the NHL and a lot of other sport leagues, and I believe some college leagues as well, for their either conference championships or just overall national championships. They have their foot in almost everything. But they have their own brand. They have their own Fanatics brand. And that's fine. They make lower quality, if you will, jerseys for like the NHL. You can order a Fanatics, you know, Joey's wearing a Washington Capitol championship shirt. They make a Washington Capitol Fanatics jersey that is not made by Adidas, a different material, and it's like screen printed on. It's completely different. I don't want to use cheaper in the sense of that it's just like bad quality. It's cheaper in the sense of they use different materials than the authentics, than the things that people want to go for. So it costs a lot less. So it's definitely more budget friendly than dropping, you know, $70, $80 into the AM or over $100 if you want to customize it. So that's really the question here is with Into the AM and their ability to do custom printing jerseys like they have done, and they're at high quality. I own one. I have some of their shirts and some of their hoodies that they've printed. It's absolutely amazing. The product itself is phenomenal. I want to know what's going to happen. Are they going to keep the jersey deal and just have Fanatics be the main source to buy those jerseys through? Are they going to be that middleman between the league and the creator of the jerseys? Are they going to be that middleman that you know, sends it out to the fans? Or are we looking at Fanatics taking over that deal? I don't want Fanatics to take over that deal. And I'm going to tell you why is because Into the AM has done such an amazing job on such short notice on the demand for the jerseys, on the quality of the jerseys, everything about those jerseys, they have absolutely crushed. And I think they should be rewarded for it. I don't think we should see this go over to Fanatics and get a lower quality, if you will, using a different material than what esport fans are known to like. So that's my number one concern. I'm not saying all their stuff is bad. They're definitely able to be more unique and put out different products faster. So that's a good thing. You know, if you want a quarter up zip shirt or jacket of your favorite Overwatch League team, you're probably going to get that. You want a hat? You're probably going to get that too. Bumper stickers, keychains, lanyards, you're going to get all that. Posters, fat heads, probably. They do all of that. So that's one of the things I'm happy about. The jersey is the big question mark here.
Yeah, and there's a whole lot that can come with this, John. I feel like maybe we could see something similar with sports where Fanatics does it alongside Into the AM. That's one thing we could see. Because if you look at Blizzard's shop right now for the Overwatch League, they do their own line separate from the Into the AM line. So it could be something along those lines. It could also be saying, hey, Fanatics, we want higher quality stuff if you're going to be our master licensee. So I could see that being a potential approach as well. It's just hard to tell because Into the AM has not been mentioned in a single one of these articles. I get it because you don't want to cross that marketing between another brand when you're making an announcement. At the same point as people who bought jerseys in the beginning, with all of these fans for Season 1 going Into the AM if they wanted a name on their jersey, now there are question marks of, hey, we built this relationship with this other company. We ordered through this other company. What does this mean for that smaller company? It'll be interesting. We did not mention one Overwatch League team reveal, John, and that is a big one for us. That is the Washington Justice. They have been announced for our DC area with a red, white, and blue code of colors, along with a beautiful jersey that we've seen thoughts of. One of the big things, though, John, this was based on the leak. We have the same looking colors, the same logo, and the same name. None of that has changed. What are your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, so it's interesting because out of everything that leaked, this was one of the ones that actually got a lot of negative feedback from the Overwatch League community. It was very predictable. It was very just, it wasn't as surprising as some of the, as some of the other teams out there. The Spark, the Titans, you know, there's so many different unique names out there. There's so many different color schemes. There's so many different ideas out here that I understand after reading all the press releases, because this was announced today when we're recording this on December 3rd. It was announced today, so we had all the press releases come out. And I get it. Justice is coming from the DC motto, Justice for All. I get that. That makes sense. Justice, it makes sense. We have the highest court in the land here in North America, Washington, D.C., the Supreme Court. That makes sense. All that makes sense. I'm fine with it. The issue is, and take it for what it's worth, the Washington Capitals, red, white, and blue. The Washington Nationals, red, white, and blue. The Washington Wizards, red, white, and blue. The Washington Mystics, red, white, and blue. There's so many, you know, okay, so the Redskins are burgundy and gold. Okay, that's fine. DC United, black and red. Okay, that's fine. Those are still different shades of red. They tweak the secondary color just a little bit, but it's if you're in the DC area, the red, white, and blue theme for teams is incredibly overdone, and a lot of us, I feel like we were hoping for something different. Now, that being said, I still love it. It's still a solid-looking jersey, solid-looking logo. Everything about it screams America, and you know what else screams America than the capital of America being Washington, D.C. So from that point of view, it makes sense. I'm fine with it. I was just hoping for something a little bit more out there, I guess.
Yeah, John, I'd have to agree. I think it's not quite the creativity we were looking for at the surface level. But once they started to explain why the logo is the way it is, why they explain the Justice name being what it is, I think it starts to make a bit more sense here as a Washington, D.C. fan. And we already know living in the area, we're going to follow Washington, D.C. It's one of the teams that is in our general area, the DMV area, with Virginia, Maryland, D.C. We're going to buy into it, even though we probably followed different teams for season one. I know we followed different teams for season one. That's very obvious because D.C. didn't have a team. So now that they're here, though, now that we're starting to see apparel for it, the apparel looks really good. The logo at first did not quite catch my attention. I like the Washington Monument being in it. Was not a huge fan of the one star. I wanted three stars to match the DC flag, as well as what we have here with the DMV, with DC, Virginia, and Maryland, giving them all a star. Maybe you make DC star a little bigger. I don't know. But at the same point, I was not super pleased with the logo. Now, again, now that we're getting background story to it, I think it makes a bit more sense, though. So I'm looking forward to repping Overwatch League DC, the DC Justice, or Washington Justice, on apparel moving forward. Speaking of apparel, Nike and the LPL apparel deal is still being negotiated. We reported it, I believe it was last week or the week before. It is not official. All of the Chinese sources that reported it are incorrect and have been forced to take it down. Earlier reports stated that they had made this deal and it was official. All LPL teams would be using Nike moving forward as their apparel sponsor. But what happened here was teams ended up coming up and saying, hey, we don't want to do that because we already have sponsorships established with other apparel companies and they have question marks. If we already have these sponsorships signed, let's just throw one out there and say RNG might be with Champion, for example. This is not the case. But if they were, then, hey, Champion's like, well, what does this mean for us if all the rights are going to Nike? And RNG is thinking the same thing. Well, hey, now we can't get that money in because the apparel sponsor is not there and we're with Nike. With that being said, all of these teams coming up and arguing against this now means they're back in negotiation. There is not a signed deal. There's nothing official yet. Nike is still trying to make moves to become the official sponsor of the LPL, but until all the organizations buy into this, it will not be the official sponsor because of all these previous done sponsor deals. So big stuff there, John. I mean, overall, I would not be surprised if Nike ends up getting the deal, but I think it might be something down the road where you have to say, hey, by 2021, Nike takes over as the official sponsor when all these other sponsorships run out.
Yeah, you know, and there's nothing really wrong with going with Nike, and you're not. It's not a negative if you sign with them. It's only going to be a positive, and you know, even you know, with Champion and any other competing clothing line out there, Nike's always going to bring you more views. They're going to bring you more exposure because there's so much power with that name Nike. So it makes a lot of sense. You know, it's something that they should negotiate going forward. It's a huge step. if Nike does become the official apparel of the LPL. It makes a lot of sense. It's a huge market. It's a great opportunity for Nike to expand themselves into esports in one of the largest regions in the world. It makes sense. So we'll have to sit back and wait and see what happens here. But I would lean towards this deal getting done because it's a win-win for both parties.
Yeah, and I think that's the kicker. It's just finding out how you still get the money for the other sponsorship deals and the appearances for those teams that already made those deals. Maybe the league ends up compensating them. Maybe that's what happens. And then the deals that are the time of the deals, I guess whatever's remaining on the deal, gets paid back to the sponsors as well. There's so many different hairy ways to go about it, but it is a hairy situation. So things are going to have to be worked out between all those organizations, the league and the sponsors, before anything moves forward. Valve is in collaboration with Perfect World, officially signing an agreement with Shanghai's government to launch Steam in China. John, this is right back to China here, and it is a big one. We've seen China be shaky on gaming before. They allow it, but they've had issues as the government because they want to almost limit internet access because they feel like it dumbs down people at times because all they're doing is gaming over in China, or it's not allowing them to focus on university studies and so on and so forth. This is a huge move forward for gaming and esports in China. Not only are we seeing esports cities and towns being created in China now, but now you have Steam. This is going to give a more of an ability for Chinese gamers to interact with other gamers throughout the world. Obviously, you're going to have Chinese servers, but it still is going to give more options to interact and to get used to different interfaces. So if they do move out or if other players move in, there's more relatability here as well.
Yeah, it's kind of funny seeing how this whole thing plays out between China and just gaming in general. Because one moment they're saying, oh, it's a health epidemic. We need to make sure that, you know, everyone in China is being healthy. They're going outside. They're doing things. Playing video games is bad and healthy. Then they do something like this. At the end of the day, money talks. And that's exactly what this is. This is the Chinese government going, hey, look, we have a great opportunity to make a lot of money here. So we're going to do it. Yes, it contradicts everything we've said. Everything we've said in the past about how unhealthy video games are for, you know, for the Chinese people and how we don't want our youth, you know, bundled up indoors playing video games 24/7. But then they go and do something like this. Personally, you have to let people be responsible for themselves. If you are going to stay inside and play video games for 8, 9, 10, 12, 15 hours a day, that is your choice. Is it a smart choice? I'm going to leave that up to, you know, for you to decide. But that is your choice. If you want to go outside for 5 hours and come inside and game for 5 hours, okay, cool, awesome, great. That is also your choice. You got to let the people have that idea, that own kind of personal control over how they spend their time. Granted, yes, I do understand China is a different animal than it is here, like in the Western Hemisphere when it comes to types of governments and freedoms and so on and so forth. I understand that. But it's very contradicting the message they're sending to their own people.
Yeah, so it's going to be big, John, just because Steam already has such a stranglehold on PC gaming as far as North America, as far as Europe goes. Now expanding into China, which has probably the biggest gaming population of anywhere in the world, this is huge for Valve as well. We look at China and what it does for the Chinese gaming scene, but Valve, this is a company that has really stepped back from making games and is focusing on distributing games almost full-time now. With the ability to open up the market to China, you're looking at a huge gold mine of different abilities to sell more games, to distribute more games, to get your name out there. If anyone succeeds here, yes, the Chinese gamers do, but Valve is also getting a very big nest egg on this one as well.
Oh, of course. And again, it's a huge money grab. You know, it's great that this gaming library is going to be able to be brought to China. But at the end of the day, you know, Tencent's not sitting here. Steam's not sitting here. Valve's not sitting here going like, oh, we're doing this for the betterment of the people. No, they're doing this because it's money, and money is amazing.
Wow, thanks for that, John.
You're welcome.
Okay, with money being amazing, let's talk Astralis because they just secured some money here. They've also secured a 2-year sponsorship deal with Unibet, which will bring some of that money, John, which will also serve as the official betting partner, which again involves money. Look at this theme going on here for their CSGO team. So Astralis bringing in Unibet, the official betting partner for their CSGO team. Overall, I mean, we can look at the sponsorship deal in and of itself, but I think the bigger thing here is that we see more and more betting coming into play. Now with sports betting legal in the U.S., with gaming kind of falling into that same scene of sports, we're going to see it more and more as we go on. Astralis being more European-based, at the same point, betting in sports and esports is getting bigger and bigger. This is a deal to capitalize on that.
Absolutely. And then on top of that, we're starting to see, especially in the Western Hemisphere, in North America specifically, gambling in traditional sports becoming more and more accepted. We're seeing that starting to open as well. And, you know, when money is really the king here, it's going to go into esports. With the amount of number, or with the amount of people watching, these highest numbers we have seen in forever coming out in esports, there's going to be gambling that comes along right with it. It's almost a no-brainer to let this happen, to have these partnerships. Yeah, I understand there's question marks around it. You know, oh, our players going to throw because they're betting? Well, how are we going to regulate players? How are we going to regulate organizations? Yes, there's all those question marks, but this is still a great deal. This is a great step forward for esports. It's going to bring more money into the scene, and, you know, bringing more money into the scene is what makes the scene grow. It makes sense to do this. I like this deal, and we're going to see more and more of this coming, not just in Europe, but in North America soon.
I like it. I like it. Last but not least here in the partnership section, Audi has signed a 3-year sponsorship deal with German FIFA team Focus Clan. Not super surprised by this one, John. I think Audi is one of these partners that we've seen involved more and more in esports as we've gone on. Signing with a German FIFA team seems just right to me.
I want to know why they're not sponsoring DC United. Because it kind of makes sense. I mean, they have Audi Field already. But, you know, hey, it works. It makes sense. Audi is a German car manufacturer, and, you know, they sponsored a German FIFA team. That makes complete sense. It's a great move. Audi, a big supporter of German football, German soccer in general. Now they're going to be moving more into the esport realm. I think this is a solid deal. If Audi treats the esport players anything like they do the professional footballers, like, fun fact, Bayern Munich players get their own choice of Audis when they sign with the team every year, and it's fully customizable to whatever they want. Can you imagine a 19-year-old playing FIFA getting that kind of a deal because Audi sponsors the team they're on? That would be awesome.
Hey, he's got a license by then, he or she. So you never know. Especially the funding that would take.
Yeah.
You're looking at these FIFA teams who are usually one player. You might as well.
Why not?
The Game Awards for 2018 will be held on December 6th. We've already mentioned them before, but we do have some new news according with them, and that will be at least one game being revealed alongside the awards with Obsidian Entertainment and their upcoming space RPG with Steam-like ads to be revealed, or steampunk-like ads. John, I'm super excited. This is one of those unannounced Xbox titles that we have talked a little bit about but have not been able to fall into because we didn't know the theme or the name of the game. We will soon know the name, but we do have an idea of the theme now.
So was this the announcement of the unannounced project that we touched on last week that drove me up a wall?
No, it was not. That's a different Microsoft studio.
Oh, of course. Of course. Of course. But leave it to Xbox to do this. No. So look, I love this. Steampunk is awesome. I love the art style. I love the idea behind it. Anything steampunk and space, that's right up my alley. So I can't wait for this announcement. I think this is going to be great. I'll be watching the Game Awards just because, you know, they're awesome and I'm a nerd. So I'll be tuning in and I can't wait to see what comes of this.
Good stuff. Good stuff. And before we go into more Microsoft madness, John, we need to talk about the event we were at this past weekend where we casted DC United's first esports event at Audi Field, properly titled the DC United Esports Open, powered by Esports Fair Play.
Yeah. I mean, what an amazing event. First off, a big thank you to both DC United and Esports Fair Play. One for DC United for believing in the power of esports and wanting to get in that marketplace. That's not easy for an organization to really make that decision. That they need a lot of evidence. They need a lot of convincing. They need to they need to know that their investment is going to be worthwhile. And DC United put the time in, they did their research, and they said, yes, we need to do this. And they made the jump into EMLS, like we talked about, I believe it was last week, which is great. It's awesome. And now DC United is wasting no time saying, hey, look, we want to look for a player. We want to look for a player for our EMLS team. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go to a local DMV organization that is known for FIFA, Esports Fair Play. Our friend Pat, great friend of the show here, has been doing absolutely wonderful things in the DMV region when it comes to FIFA. DC United, teams up with Pat and Esports Fair Play, and they put on this amazing event, and we had the honor to cast it. You know, I mean, we've done FIFA tournaments before, casting-wise, but nothing at this level where there's a major organization tied to that name. And, you know, allow me to fangirl just a little bit. The idea, Joey, that we got to stand there and the first words out of our mouths was live from Audi Field. This is the DC United Esports Open powered by Esports Fair Play. That was so amazing. Like, that was such a rush realizing that, hey, this is happening with DC United. This is happening in Washington, D.C. This is happening. We're becoming the East Coast capital of esports. I absolutely love this. DC United, first class organization. They were absolutely outstanding. They were so nice to us, so accommodating, and they were blown away by the excitement of just the participants, of Pat, of ourselves, just the entire community. And it looks like they'll be doing more in the future. But I also think they might have found their player for EMLS during that tournament.
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility. And this is our second time casting for DC United, first time at Audi Field. But, John, it was such a difference from going from a bar to Audi Field for the casting. It was such a huge event. They filled up. So it was advertised about 2.5 days before the event, and they filled up 50 people in those 2 days. 50 participants, and it was capped at 50. So who knows how many they would have pulled in. It was a giant event. The best players of FIFA in the DMV area came in for this event. We saw previous tournament champions from DC United events fall in earlier rounds. Some fell in the first or second round. Some fell in the quarters. But none of them made it all the way to the final, which is super surprising with the talent that we've seen in previous tournaments. But overall, we were there, John. We were casting. We met some great people. Working with Pat is always a pleasure. And then working with DC United, shout out to Perez as well. He was a very friendly person to work with, extremely professional, and he did a great job at the event as well. But, John, I am so much looking forward to working with DC United again, and I'm so excited to see how they do things in esports.
Absolutely. Could not be more excited to work with them in the future. Let's keep this ball rolling. I mean, DC is blowing up right now when it comes to esports, and I couldn't be happier about it.
Big, big stuff there. Speaking of blowing up, this time back to gaming, Microsoft Madness. Microsoft's gaming revenue, John, exceeded $10 billion last fiscal year, okay? $10 billion last fiscal year. But if you go back to a few episodes ago, we did report that their quarter one numbers were up, right? $10 billion last fiscal year. The gaming division is up 44% in quarter one. That is freaking insane to me. You made $10 billion last year in your gaming division, and you're already up 44% in quarter one sales for the gaming division. That is insane numbers.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens when you acquire every single developer and studio in the country. I mean, there's a lot of hype. I mean, look, we were even talking about this on Saturday while we're munching down on some amazing pizza there in the district. The bar has been set so incredibly high for Microsoft with all these acquisitions. There's really only two options. You succeed or you massively fail. And I feel like there's no in-between ground. And even the market is showing this with their fiscal numbers. There's a lot of hype with these acquisitions. There's a lot of expectations. And that's great. That is absolutely great. It drives your stock up. It drives everything up. That's what you want. But you need to deliver. And if there's one thing Microsoft has struggled with in the past, yes, the past, is those exclusive titles. Are those titles to fight against what Sony and PlayStation have. With these acquisitions, you have to be sitting here thinking, this is their opportunity. This is their moment to really put Sony in second place for good if this plays out. But the downside could be catastrophic if it doesn't.
Yeah, it's very interesting to look at the history. I would argue that PS2 won heavily over the Xbox. Then Xbox 360 dominated PlayStation 3 in exclusives. Well, maybe not in exclusives, but in exclusives plus the online platform version. Then you look at this generation, Xbox One fell very handily behind PlayStation 4. PlayStation 4 almost doubling console sales. But now, moving into the next generation, whatever the heck they end up naming them, I'm guessing PlayStation 5 and maybe Xbox 2, whatever they end up being named, I think this is Xbox's way of trying to get ahead for that next generation. So not necessarily benefiting for this one because these games are going to take 2, 3, maybe 4 years to develop. But as we go down the line, I think this is a buy-in for the future, most likely with big releases coming out 2 years later when we see that Xbox being announced. Huge, huge stuff there. This one we don't have to spend too much time on, John. F. Scott Fraser to write the Gears of War movie for Universal. I think we talked about this. It was probably back in the summer that they were looking for someone to write a Gears of War movie. We have seen this hundreds and hundreds of times where video game movies fail very hard. I think I would say Prince of Persia was actually pretty decent as one of the better movies out there that has been adapted from a video game. Gears of War, a great story in my humble opinion. I really enjoyed playing through the story and immersing myself in that environment. At the same point, it's another video game movie, and I am nervous.
Yeah, I mean, do you remember the hype around the Warcraft movie? You know, this legendary title, not just in the world of MMORPGs, but this legendary title is getting a Hollywood-made movie. There was so much hype around it. The trailers looked outstanding, and it was such a disappointment. It was so... and they changed the lore, and they did everything that they shouldn't have done, and it became just like every other video game movie. You know, Gears of War, I think, would be great if they do it right. It's right up there with Metal Gear Solid. I think those are two titles that would do outstanding as movie franchises. But the problem is when Hollywood gets their hands on it, they just destroy everything that made those games great to do what they think is best for Hollywood. And it kills it.
RIP. Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not going to say I don't like F. Scott Fraser's stuff, but I haven't really immersed myself in it very much. Let's put it that way. So it hasn't really drawn me in too much. With that being said, this is a completely different franchise. You have a lot to work with what is in the video game. I think one of my biggest problems with these video game adaptations, John, is that they go off script. What we as gamers fell in love with was what we saw in the game in cinematics. And I feel like almost every one of these movies goes completely off script and makes up their own thing, which ends up either destroying the lore or giving us something we didn't want to see. So I feel like if they want to change it, you almost have to go away from the main characters and do a side story at some point. So we're getting more into the lore, we're getting more information, we're trying something new. But if you're going to go with what we already have in the game, we as fans kind of just want to see that readapted as live action.
Yeah, and even if you're not a lore junkie, you don't want to see the game change that much. Prime example, Metal Gear Solid. The original game for PlayStation took place in at Shadow Moses. All the other games moved away from it. Metal Gear Solid 5 went back to Shadow Moses. And when you go back to Shadow Moses, was it 5 or was it 4? I think it was 4. Metal Gear Solid 4, when you go back to Shadow Moses, that moment was emotional. And it sounds crazy to think about that, but Metal Gear Solid is one of those games where cinematics are heavy, are a big part of the game. Going back there, seeing that entire area remastered in present-day graphics in 1080i and just experiencing everything, and they had the echoes of the voices of scenes from Metal Gear Solid playing and everything, that was nostalgia. That was so good. It took me forever to get through that stage because I was so emotionally attached to that game as a kid when I played it. I'm just like, oh my gosh, I am back here now. This is amazing. I remember this struggle. I remember this battle. I remember when, you know, Sniper Wolf died. I remember when I had to do this. I remember that. That is what you want in a movie. You want to be able to reminisce. If you're going to go back and do something, you have to keep the lore intact. That is the proper way of doing it. And I argue you cannot find a Metal Gear Solid fan who is a fan of the entire franchise, all the way from Metal Gear Solid 1 on PlayStation, all the way through the present-day franchise, that does not love that moment when you go back and hear everything like you had in the first game, and they did not get emotional. That is what you need, Hollywood. If you want to be successful in adapting a video game to a movie, that is what you need.
And, John, it's honestly the same thing with Gears of War. If you look at that game, some of the emotional scenes in that just bring you back. When you're playing through them again, you might still shed tears. When you think about them, you might shed tears as well. And even just the comedy aspects of it, there are so many good comedic lines used in that game as well. That's the stuff I want to see. Even if you slightly change up the line, I still want that moment. I still want to be able to feel that nostalgia from that moment. And I think that's what we really haven't been able to capture in game adaptations to movies. Moving on, Nintendo has updated their content creation guidelines to make it easier for creative fans to monetize videos that include Nintendo game content in them. This is something that needed to be done, and I'm glad it's finally there. The Switch is doing incredibly well, and you have more and more content creators trying to buy into Nintendo, but they've run into hard ropes because of this. Because there are these limitations that other games do not have, now Nintendo is lessening them, and they are doing it at the perfect time because Smash Ultimate comes out this week.
Yeah, and, you know, it makes sense. If you want to monetize videos that include Nintendo games, the issue here is that Nintendo has such iconic characters. Mario, Luigi, Peach, pretty much everything from the Mario universe is really up there. They have to protect their brand, and that's essentially what they're doing here. Other video game creators and content creators and everything have this understanding that, hey, you know, okay, if someone's streaming my game, that's really free publicity. But at the same time, there's always that nervousness that they might do something that might hurt your reputation, which honestly, even if you say, no, you can't stream Nintendo games, it's still going to happen. People are going to find ways around it, and it's still going to hurt, if you will, your image. I don't think it really will, but that's their fear. So it makes sense, but at the same time, they want a piece of that pie. They don't want people to make a profit off of their creation as well. You know, they want to be able to keep control of what they do. It makes sense. It sucks at the same time, but it makes sense for Nintendo.
This next one makes sense as well, John. Rainbow Six introduces an evaluation period within which operators of each new season are unavailable to pick in competitive play. This is nothing crazy, John. We've seen it in other games before, Overwatch being one of those notable ones. When you have a new person like Brigitte come out, for example, she does not immediately go into competitive play. The big reason for that is because you'd have so many players inting. When someone just comes out, they do not know how to play her. They do not know how to play against her. This is going to give people time to adapt to these new operators before bringing them into competitive play and tilting people like crazy.
Yeah, and it makes sense because that's the biggest fear, because when a new character comes out, they're usually filling a void in the meta. They're filling something that is missing. So when they come out, everyone's going to be like, oh my gosh, they're so OP, because they're filling that void. They're filling what was missing in that current meta at that point in time. And then they balance out and everything, but people try to abuse them. I like it. It makes sense. Overwatch does it. League of Legends does it for ranked. You can't play new characters within a certain period of time after their release. You can do in normals. That makes sense. So that's what I would go forward with. And I applaud Rainbow Six for doing the same thing with an evaluation period. That makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, and honestly, part of that OP feel comes from people just not knowing how to play against them, really. I mean, you look at people who struggle playing with them, but also playing against them. If you have a new champion coming in and I don't quite understand how his or her kit works, I'm not quite going to be able to play against them to the highest of my ability. And that's why you see so many new champions, new operators, new heroes coming out with higher than 50% win rates, with a lot of them up near 60 to 65 for those first few weeks of play. Once people adapt to them, it usually drops back down to a level of more normalcy. Mike Saposa, co-founder of Major League Gaming, MLG for most of you gamers out there, and former NBA executive Bobby Sharma have teamed up to launch Electronic Sports Group, ESG, a new global advisory firm. See, this is what happens when you have a huge headache. This is big, John. We see it more and more. We need more advocates for esports, particularly for players. This, to me, is a global adversary forum that is going to be able to not only help players, but help organizations who are looking to buy into esports. You have so many football teams buying into the Overwatch League now. This is now going to make more of an option to buy into other leagues. Overwatch League, because it's so big, because it's a huge league that a lot of people have heard about, it's easy to buy in and invest in. When you look at some of these smaller leagues, like maybe Call of Duty World League, for example, this firm can come in and say, hey, this is why this league would be beneficial for you. This is why the league would benefit from you joining as well, and vice versa. I think this is a huge move, and we should see much, much more of this going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're seeing, like, you touched on the NFL and Overwatch League, but we're seeing a lot of other leagues do it too. Like, the NHL right now is researching the idea of a hockey league. Granted, that is something that still stays within their ecosystem, for, you know, kind of like what we see with the NBA 2K League and the NBA. But at the same time, that's a step in the right direction. A lot of the organizations in sports aren't as big as NFL franchises, so they can't afford to make those huge jumps like what we're seeing from these NFL teams into a separate game like Overwatch. So it's great. And like you said, it's great for smaller titles also, with these organizations coming into them. It's a great way for these traditional organizations to kind of test the water to see, hey, is this really for us? Are we really set up at this point in time in our organization to jump into this new adventure, this new experience called esports? So it makes sense. And, you know, having an advisory firm, that's even more, that's perfect. You know, someone who understands what's going on both sides. They co-founded Major League Gaming and they're a former NBA executive. Okay, that makes sense. He has experience in both. He can bring those together and convince more organizations to join because of that.
Absolutely love it. Let's talk Esports Hall of Fame. Faker will be the first League of Legends player inducted into the Esports Hall of Fame. This is exciting, John. He just won the Special Community Award, which allowed fans to vote on the next inductee. Faker with an overwhelming win. Big surprise there. This is a three-time World League of Legends champion. And on top of that, this Hall of Fame is starting to grow. So it was presented by Pay Safeguard in cooperation with ESL. It has been around since 2016. I had honestly never heard of it before. And it currently includes Counter-Strike player Emil Heaton Christensen and Quake player Dennis Thresh Fong being the first inductees to the league, now including Faker. If you can go for anyone in esports, John, I feel like Faker is one of the most influential people esports has ever had now in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and it's really not even close. You can't make an argument that Faker doesn't belong in here. It makes sense. Now, Joey, my only concern here is, are we going to have three different Hall of Fames for esports? I mean, we have like 15 different award shows. Can we narrow it down to one? Can we all come to an agreement that this is the one and only esports Hall of Fame? I don't want to wake up 2 years from now and have 14 different Hall of Fame, announcements for 14 different esports Hall of Fames. It doesn't make sense. Let's just keep it at one, please. Esports, I know we have a very good history of taking one idea and making it 12. We do it a lot. Let's not do it with this one. Keep it at one. And yes, Faker deserves to be in here. I would argue he should have been one of the first ones to be drafted into the Hall of Fame. What he has done, not just for League of Legends, but esports in general, there is no stronger name in esports right now than Faker. Granted, SKT didn't do so well this past year. Doesn't matter. The name Faker will make people smile and also absolutely terrified if they have to play against him.
Yeah, I mean, you have to agree, especially with it starting in 2016. How does Faker not get on that initial ballot? You look at esports worldwide. Yes, CSGO has a huge influence in Europe, but League of Legends, Korea, China, North America, Europe, it has the biggest viewership numbers we've ever seen. It broke the record this year even with, 200 million some plus? I don't even remember what the final number was. And a lot of those could be Chinese bots. With that being said, it'll still shatter the previous record. So League of Legends has been around. It's continued to grow year after year. I think it's crazy he's not in there already, but I'm glad he's finally making his way in. With your argument, John, I think this is the first of many esports Hall of Fames to be out there.
No.
I mean, just look at it. The award shows, just like you said, there are so many, and everyone still attends everyone. You look at video game awards, there's God knows how many, 20, 30, 40. There's just so, so many things duplicated. The other thing with the Hall of Fame here, we look at football, for example. The NFL has its own Hall of Fame. The NBA has its own Hall of Fame. So are we eventually going to see a League of Legends Hall of Fame, a CSGO Hall of Fame? I think the big argument against that is that a lot of these games don't last very long. You look at the NFL, it's got 100 years under its belt. League of Legends is the longest lasting at 8. Well, CSGO is the longest lasting. But even then, will it be around forever? Will we eventually see a new CSGO with better graphics? So it's really hard to do a broken down by game Hall of Fame. So I think overall, it's going to have to be a multi-game Hall of Fame. At the same point, I don't know if it stays to just one. I'd love to see a brick and mortar one somewhere where someone just claims like, hey, Seoul, South Korea, home of the real esports Hall of Fame.
Well, hey, there's that Kmart over by you that just recently closed. That's a lot of area we could put a Hall of Fame in, right? We'll have it right here in Washington, D.C., man. Let's go.
For the record, that was a Giant, I believe.
Oh, whatever. Yeah, I mean, you know, look, Kmart's closing. I mean, it was a good guess.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And I don't know. I don't know what they'll do. And who knows, maybe it'll end up in an esports town or esports city in China for all we know.
Oh.
But yeah, I would love to see one. I would love to see everyone come to an agreement on that. As much as I enjoy watching award shows every other weekend for esports and gaming, it would be great to have one. Let's go to the League of Drama, sticking with League of Legends, but changing the topic up a bit. Multiple teams have now filed formal complaints or a joint formal complaint. We really don't know the exact details against Perks and G2 for player tampering. John, this is huge. Not only because there's been accusations that Perks ended up tampering and bringing caps over because of previous really discussions. We saw Jacob Wolf come out with a piece saying that Caps was going to G2 before Caps was even released from his contract. If there's already talk going around in the media circles, that definitely means there's something going on behind the scenes. With that being said, this has happened multiple times. We've seen G2 take Mithy and Sven from OG. A lot of people allege that that was before their contracts had been up, that talks had started. So this is going to be a big argument, and there's going to be a huge precedent set here regardless of which way this ends up going. The big thing is we're looking at a possible punishment for Perks and a possible punishment for G2 as well, depending how this plays out and what proof is on the table.
Yeah, you know, it's not unique to League of Legends either. Player tampering, unfortunately, is something that it goes on in traditional sports also. We hear about it from time to time, and it is an ugly mark on the sport. It's an ugly mark on the industry when organizations cannot respect contracts. They can't respect those negotiation periods. They can't respect what's written on paper, but yet they're willing to violate other organizations' contracts and terms of agreement, but don't you dare violate mine, because I'll come after you. But and it's, I don't know, it's ridiculous. And there's a lot involved here. There's multiple organizations. It's like, what, 4 or 5 European organizations involved in this potential tampering case. The amount of fines and suspensions that could be handed out here is astronomical. There's so much damage that could be done to the LEC. I got that right. It's no longer the EULs. It's yep. The LEC. I'm going to struggle with that until I'm dead. The LEC, there's so much going on in the past 2 years in that league. This is exactly what they didn't need. And it's unfortunate. Perks is a really good player. Having Perks and Caps on the same team is OP as crazy. But if you're going to do it, you need to do it right. And if they have that solid evidence, I am looking forward to hearing what it is. I'm looking forward to see what happens. And this is going to shake up the LEC going forward.
And the huge thing is, it's not only that Caps move. It's the fact that this has happened for 2 years because of these reports. So it's Fnatic is one of the... We don't know officially what the organizations are that are reporting this. It's believed to be Fnatic, Origin, Schalke, O4. Rocat was in there for the Hjarnan and Wadid move. And I believe there was one more that I can't think of off the top of my head. But overall, so you have big name organizations. H2K is the other one. So about 3 of them are no longer in the EULCS, now named LEC. A few of them still are, though. And you have big names such as Fnatic and Schalke 04, who's been up toward the top of the standings the last few seasons. With these teams jumping in, and who knows how many other ones, because there have been negotiations with other teams overseas as well, this is a big thing. And one thing we talked about earlier in our Discord server, John, discord.me/OTN for those wanting to join it, we talked about how it's different from region to region. We look at Korea and China, there have been harsher penalties given out for things like player tampering before. When you look at NA and EU, there's been a lot more lax stuff around for stuff like player tampering or stuff like account sharing, different things like that. The only thing that's really been consistent across all the regions has been the toxicity. If a toxic player comes out, they get smashed with bans. So other than that, and then different little things here and there, there hasn't really been much consistency. Now there is a global rule out there that states how these things will be played out globally for all Riot Game leagues. There's a few different ones out here, but the one that looks like it applies the most is player intensively tampering with or poaching another player. So typical and minimum suspension time will be 5 competitive months on that, with a maximum suspension time up to 10 competitive months. Limitation will be 8 calendar months overall. So, John, this is huge. With it being as long as it is, and I did not think it would be this long, I was thinking we'd see maybe fines if there's evidence, and then on top of that, maybe a 6 to 7 week ban. But now looking at this, they can ban Perks potentially up to 10 competitive months if a lot of these go through with proof.
Yeah, 10 competitive months, that's your entire year.
That's a whole season.
Yeah, I mean, and that's good. We need to hold players accountable. The amount of money that is being spent in esports, it's the same reason why it's a big deal when it happens in traditional sports. It's not just a violation of trust between the player and their current organization. It's a violation of trust between that player and all the sponsors they have and everything else. That brings so much negativity to that name. These players have built a brand around that name. Faker, great example. That name Faker is known worldwide in the world of esports. Reckless, Sneaky, Bjergsen. Those are names everyone knows regardless of what region you're in. bang, another one. These players have brands. This is going to hurt their brand. Organizations are going to sit back and look and go, hey, look, do we want to take a risk on this player? This is what's tied to this name. What can they bring to our organization with this name? Doublelift. Doublelift is a prime example. He is a polarizing figure in North American LCS, but he has a dedicated fan base that follows him to no matter what team he goes to. TSM knew that. When he came over from CLG, they were going to get Doublelift fans. When he moved to Liquid, Liquid knew they were going to get Doublelift fans. It's a smart move. That's his brand. If Doublelift was accused of doing something like this and ends up getting fined or suspended, that's going to hurt his brand. And that's going to tick a lot of his fans off. And he's going to lose so much fans just, you know, around his name, but also that organization. There's so many things in motion here that it's just, it hurts everyone involved. And at the end of the day, it hurts the fan the most. And that's who you should be most concerned about.
Well, that and the league, John, is the other thing. I mean, yes, you can talk publicity, but also just the level of play. When you have someone as talented as Perks being taken off the field potentially here, being taken off the Rift, that is a huge loss not only for G2, but for viewership, really, for EULCS, or LEC, excuse me. Like, when you look at that overall, that is going to be a huge, huge factor moving forward. So it's going to be interesting to watch this case because I think it is also going to set a huge precedent because we've seen this before. It's been a thing in NA, it's been a thing in EU, it's been a thing all over the place. Now, finally, a huge case coming forward. Depending how this goes, I think it's going to set the tone moving forward for the next 10 years or so. Let's talk free agency. Last week we talked to NA, so we're going to hop over to EU here. John, we are running out of time on the show because we are going a little long, but we're going to hit some of these first with XL. Top, Sendu, jungle, Taxer, jungle, Cadrel. Mid, not available yet. We have Venzer and Jeskla as the ADCs, and support, Kasing. So of the names we've heard on here, John, I don't know if you've heard of any others. I've heard of Cadrel. He was a talented mid laner who played for H2K, then switched jungle. He could never really find a rhythm. He's not a bad jungler, but the team just did not click with him. So overall, he's getting a second chance here on XL in that jungle position. Kasing, a very talented support, now with XL as well.
Yeah, Kasing is really the big name that stands out here. Solid support player, has a great name, that has a great product and a great brand that's built around it. If we're going to build on that last segment here at all. Kasing is the big name here to focus on. They're going to try to build this team around Kasing. So I'm looking forward to see how XL does that going into the split.
It will be exciting to watch. Speaking of exciting, Fnatic, they have returned four of their members. Obviously, Caps leaving to G2, and that led to this Perks controversy. And Soaz has moved on to Misfits. We have Weepo re-signing. He'll be here for another 3 years for Fnatic. Broxah has another year on his contract. Reckless has another 2 years on his. And Hillisong with a one-year contract. And they have added Nemesis from Mad Lions. If you guys watched the Iberian Cup, he did extremely well in the semifinals and then went on to the finals. Won the cup as his last match with Mad Lions and got a pentakill in the last game as well. He is an exciting young talent. I think he's doing extremely well on Fnatic. And John, the big factor here, he reminds me of all of the previous four Fnatic mids that they've had. He plays all those champions. He has all those styles. The one key factor comparing him to Caps, Caps was more flashy, and I think he had a higher ceiling, but he also had a lower floor. When you look at Nemesis, he plays a lot safer. He can still pull off flashy plays, but he's not going to overextend to get that crazy 1v1 kill that Caps would. But he's also not going to overextend and die like Caps did under turret. So for me, I think he's going to fit Fnatic's playstyle even better, to be honest. I hate losing Caps, but when you look at someone like Buipo, he can play aggressive. Reckless can also play aggressive. Now you have Nemesis, who's a bit of a safer option, and he's done well in championships before. Obviously, the Iberian Cup, European Masters are on a whole different level than the LEC. With that being said, I think Nemesis is a very promising talent coming up.
Yeah, and I'm going to go ahead and put the entire Fnatic fan club on notice real quick. You do this every time a new, young, undiscovered talent comes to Fnatic. You freak out, you take to social media, you grab your pitchforks, you grab your torches, and you want to burn the whole house down. And then after a split, you're like, oh, we love Febiven. Oh, we love Caps. Oh, we love Nemesis. Fnatic fans in 2019 going into the summer. That's exactly what's going to happen again. This kid is talented. I went back and watched some of those VODs. He has the skill to compete in Europe. Yes, Europe is a huge step up coming from Mad Lions, but he has the raw talent. It's going to take him some time. His spring split, you're going to see the potential. You may not see the results, but you're going to see the potential. The summer split, that's when you need to see, sit down and look and say, hey, did he learn from this, that transition period being the spring split? Did he take his skill set, transition it to the European style of League of Legends, and how far can he go with it? I feel like this kid's ceiling is pretty high. And I agree with you. His ceiling is a lot higher. Pardon me. His floor is a lot higher than Caps was, because Caps was willing to make those crazy plays to tower dive when he probably shouldn't be tower diving, you know, level three. But that's what made Caps Caps. He brought that excitement when he escapes with two health left or something crazy like that, or he makes an amazing escape. That is how Caps made his name. Nemesis doesn't have to do that. He needs to build his own name here, and I think he can do it.
I have to agree on that one. G2, the top side is staying the same. We have Caps coming in from the mid lane, or for the mid lane from Fnatic. Perks is actually moving from the mid lane down to ADC if he ends up being able to play, that is. And then support, Mickey X coming in. Wadid has left the organization at this point, so he is gone. Kjarnan is supposedly still with the organization. Part of me is wondering if G2 is holding on to him because of these allegations coming out. I don't know if they're related or not. I'm excited to see how this roster plays, though, John. You have a lot of talent here with Caps and Perks in particular. Such good mechanical players. At the same point, I'm a little upset at what this does to the LEC. You're moving a huge mid laner to a different position. So if he adapts, I think this is great for G2. At the same point, you are kind of lowering the quality of other EULCS or LEC pools out there with mid lane. If Perks can make the adaptation, and if you look at his match history, it looks like it's been rocky. But if it ends up going well, if he's able to push better ADCs into that role, then we'll see what happens, because both of these mechanical players are extremely talented, possibly the top five in the LEC.
The G2 Fnatic rivalry is back with this, and a lot is riding on the idea that these players can play, that they're not going to get banned, that they're only going to get fined for whatever tampering that happened. If they get suspended, this team completely falls apart. I feel like that is a huge, huge blow to G2. So there's so much riding on this decision coming down from Riot. So I'm going to reserve my opinion on G2 until I find out what happens. If this roster plays, if every single one of them get to play, this roster is scary and is going to push Fnatic for the LEC title coming up.
I'm going to argue that G2 goes off to a slow start, even if they have Perks. I think it's going to take time for him to adapt down there. Yes, you have a great support. Yes, you have a lot of mechanical talent, but playing bot lane is very different from roams in mid, and that's what Perks did best. He was able to get advantages for his team because he could roam so well. Without that advantage, I think it's going to be a bit tougher for him to adapt. I think G2 is going to do well. They're probably top four. At the same point, I think they get off to a slow start in the spring. Misfits. Misfits looks so good, John. Soaz in the top lane. So much veteran experience there. Maxler in the jungle, arguably the top jungler in EU, depending how you look at it. We have Obsess coming in as the other jungle. Senkux in the mid lane. That is not true. They have not updated this yet. He is actually out of mid lane. It's Febivin coming in as the full-time mid laner. ADC, Hansama, and Gorilla coming over from Kingzone Dragon X as the support. I think this is a top two roster. I want to say your disadvantage is Soaz to a degree. So I love Soaz as a player. I think he has one of the best champion pools and levels of experience in League of Legends. At the same point, we've seen him struggle. He's done well on tanks, but when it's come to carry meta, he's either done really well or really bad. Depending what Soaz we see, I think that is going to be one of your kickers here. Febivin has also looked pretty poor the last few years. H2K, he was all right. When he went to Clutch, he was not as good. Part of this contributes to who he has in the jungle, in my humble opinion. When you have a jungle that knows how to support mid lane well, I think we see Febivin shine. Now that he's with Maxlore, I think it's going to be a lot better in that sense. So we'll see how that all ends up, but overall, I think it's going to be pretty good there.
Yeah, Soaz is the question mark here. With the way the current meta is trending, pending any, you know, preseason shakeup Riot is known for doing, Soaz will be the biggest question mark on this team going forward. Febivin returning to the EU, I like that move. He didn't do too well in North America. He didn't really have a team around him either. Really, really struggled. I do like Hansama here. I do like Gorilla coming in as the main support now, coming over from Kingzone Dragon X. I love that name. I hate saying it. But there's a lot of potential with this roster. I feel like this is definitely a top-tier roster, and we'll give both Fnatic and G2 a run for their money.
definitely watch Maxlor and Fevvin. That is the key here. A lot of analysts rank Maxlor in their top three junglers. I'd probably put him in top five. I think personally Broxah is the best jungler over there. Obviously Fnatic fan, but overall, Broxah, you look at his impact in Worlds, I think he's a top jungler. Maxlor has shown that he can get it done, though, and I think this is Fevvin's first chance since he left Rainover on Fnatic that he'll really get a shot, because Jankos didn't really find himself until after Fevvin left. Origin. We look at Origin. We have Alfari coming in from Misfits, extremely talented mechanical player. Cold, Nuke Duck, Sheriff, and Mythi. The big thing to watch for me here, John, is Sheriff and Mythi. You have Mythi, who's a veteran support who has been playing with a top ADC in Ven before. Top when he was in Europe, they obviously struggled on TSM, as many European players have, except for Bjergsen. He seems to have the kryptonite, or the opposite of kryptonite, over there. Now Mythi coming in with Sheriff, I think this is another opportunity for him to bring up a young ADC to a crazy high level. I expect a lot of good things from the bot lane here.
Nuke Duck.
Rough.
Not a fan. Never really have been. He had one good split. Maybe you can maybe argue one good year. Other than that, I feel like he's highly overrated. I'm not a fan of this. I don't feel like he performs that well. I feel like he's lazy in certain parts of the game. I feel like he's not aggressive enough in other parts of the game. I feel like he's a team player when it pays off for him, and he's not a team player when he doesn't want to be. There's a lot of things here I don't like about Nuke Duck. He may be a great person. I'm not knocking his character. I'm just knocking his play style. Not a fan. And if you play fantasy LCS, just stay away from him. It's not even worth it. Or how are they going to do fantasy, Joey? It's no longer LCS. It's going to be NALCS and LEC. It's going to be so bad.
Okay, John, we are, again, running out of time here, so I'm going to push through a few of these. Rogue, we have Top, Prophet, Jungle, Kickus, Senkux in the mid lane, Hekyu at ADC, Wadded at support. Really like the Wadded move. He's definitely proven himself, and Kickus in particular has been an extremely viable player. When you look at Team Vitality, I think he's one of the big reasons they were able to push as far as they did at Worlds. He is going to bring a whole lot to this team. My big question mark is Hekyu with that big Q in his name. He has not shown up for me. A lot of people are saying he might this year. He has the talent, but I still have a lot to be discerned there. You look at Schalke 04, John, Memento coming in as the jungle. Not my biggest fan there. Abadage, though, and Upset, two very talented carries at a young level. I expect a lot from these two. What do you think?
Yeah, Schalke's still missing some players here in their roster, but I do like what they have so far. They have a solid core coming up here for this organization. If they can finish it out with, you know, a mid-tier top laner and maybe a young, talented support, I feel like that'll put Schalke in a really great position going forward. Get that experience in the spring split, make some tweaks to your play style, get that team chemistry, come back for the summer and compete. I like the position Schalke's put themselves in. Can they just round that roster out and really put together a competing team?
SK Gaming, no announcements yet. Splice, we have one announcement coming in for the mid. That is Humanoid joining from Illuminar Gaming. I honestly have not heard much about Humanoid. I'd be surprised if you have, because I've never heard of Illuminar Gaming. So we'll wait to see who he is. A lot of talented young EU mids coming up, though, so he could be one of them. Kasing joining XL Esports here, so support is still vacant at the moment. Team Vitality, last but not least. Everyone on the roster is staying the same, except we do have a jungle switch up here. We have Mowgli coming all the way from the Jungle Book. I mean, Africa's Freaks.
That was bad.
From Korea here. I know, that's cringeworthy, wasn't it? That one's for Clue.
That was for Clue, yeah.
That one was straight up for Clue. Mowgli coming in here, swinging on his Vine into the Team Vitality roster. I like this move a lot. I think the language barrier is the one thing that makes me nervous here. I do not know how well Mowgli speaks English. You come into a very English roster. I mean, Jizuki speaks Italian. The rest of the guys speak English pretty fluently, and I believe Jizuki's English is pretty good as well. Mowgli coming in, if he can get over the language barrier here early, I think this is a very, very, very talented roster. I do miss Kickus, though, because Kickus brought a lot to this roster, like I said, in Worlds. His communication took this team to a new level. He reinvigorated them. Without that communication from Kickus, and now with Mowgli, more mechanics but less communication coming in, I'm a little bit nervous, but overall, mechanically, this roster did get better.
Yeah, Vitality definitely took a step forward. I love the Mowgli pickup. I feel like if he can get past that language barrier, I feel like he'll still be able to perform with the communication that is already built into the game. I feel like there's a great opportunity here for Mowgli. He's going to have to take language courses. He's going to have to be able to talk strategy and have in-game conversations to ensure team fights go well. And I feel like, you know, he'll still have a translator, you know, for off the rift things, but in the rift, he's going to be able to learn phrases and sayings pretty quickly to go in the game and have that pay out for Vitality on the rift. Well, Nation, that does it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you can get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get, unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on iTunes and Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to interact with us at this show. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with this show?
Level Up Nation, you know the drill. Head on over to Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, wherever you want to go. You can go to all of them if you really want to. That is at the Level Up Podcast, the LVLUP Podcast. Last but not least, we stream this show as well as other streams on the regular on Twitch, twitch.tv/OTN_live.
All right, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of the Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
Level Up.